Okay, welcome back. A lot going on, as this is the case every day. It just doesn't stop, nor is it going to stop. It's going to continue on and on, right through the end of the year. I think you're going to see a major reset, and I'm not talking strictly financial reset, probably by the first of the year. I think that that's what's planned, that's what's coming. Not talking about the virus here, I'm talking about international financial geopolitics, control of the planet. Global coronavirus cases up more than 1 million in the last 5 days. World Health Organization and Teddy Boy said, coronavirus remains public enemy number one, and the pandemic may get worse and worse and worse. The WHO will not investigate the Wuhan lab, where many feel the coronavirus was kept. Texas prison coronavirus outbreaks continue with thousands infected. It just goes, it's on and on and on. I hope you heard the first hour tonight, second hour. First hour especially with the president of Ghana reading from that Rockefeller report. Very interesting material to consider. We have another story that I want Henry to straighten out here. I have not been able to research it other than find three sources for it. There was some problem with some of the laboratories in Florida, resulting in errors on the state's report on virus positivity rates, according to a Fox News report, which said, and I'll quote here and let Henry bring some focus to it, countless labs have reported a 100% positivity rate, which means every single person tested was positive, so said Fox 35 News. Other labs had very high positivity rates, not 100%. Orlando Health, for example, reported a 98% positivity rate. Lee Memorial Hospital, PanCare of Florida, Inc., and Advanced Medical of Naples all reported a solid 100% positivity rates, not a single negative result included. All right, it goes on from there, but you'll see the stories up there on the net. They're in headlines. They're everywhere. Henry, welcome back. How are you tonight? And let's bring some focus to this Florida lab testing problem.
I'm good. I haven't actually seen the Florida testing story. 100% positive would be suspect, but I'm not sure who uncovered this.
I've got three. Yeah, I have three. Fox, the Fox affiliate down there, Fox 35. That's their station number on cable or whatever. They did the work. I'll send it to you. There are three stories that cover the same topic, three different sources, so I'll send those over to you. Okay. In the meantime, World Health Organization, Teddy Tedros, says that the situation, he repeated himself, is going to get worse and worse and worse. That's what Ted said. So he may be right. I don't know.
Yeah. Well, I think
that looks like it.
I think that's based in part on where the virus is spreading or replicating or infecting so quickly. And, that's the United States, Brazil, Russia, and India. And all four of those countries have kind of something in common. They got strong dictators that think they can talk the virus away. And so none of them are having very good success. And the virus
is just replicating
like crazy,
yeah.
Right? Well, it's especially if you ignore it, it just makes it mad or it infects more.
Right.
The more you ignore it, the more you get infected. And these guys think that, they can ignore it. They can tell the people, not a problem, it's a little flu, da 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 da. And you can go about your business. Don't worry about it. And, you know, they're running out of hospital beds. And the numbers are increasing like crazy. Today was, according to my numbers, the second highest that we've ever had. I had it at 68,000 cases last week. I think it was last Thursday or Wednesday. And today was 66,186. So it was within a couple thousand of the record high. And and these numbers are just by the state labs. It doesn't include, you know, military, which they don't cover, VA hospital cases they don't cover, prisons they don't cover, and any of the U.S. territories they don't cover. So if you threw some of those in, it would probably be close to 70,000 again. That other one that I had at 68 was reported at 70,000 by some.
Got it.
Including the Worldometer. You know, the three states that were leading it were the same three. Actually, Florida was... had the least of the three. Both Texas and California topped 10,000. California, which may actually get a little higher with another update, but as of today, the latest update, which is 7:35 p.m. local time, they were up to 11,290. Texas set a record. They were 10,745. And Florida actually was the lowest. They didn't break 10,000 today. They broke, they did 9,194. Yesterday they did 12,624. And the day before they did 15,300. So, you know, I'll have to take a look at that article. It sounds pretty fishy. You know, most labs would wonder what's going on if they were getting 100% positives on the test, because they generally don't get that high a frequency. When they get into double digits, that indicates the location isn't testing enough. And Florida, think got around 20 something, the low 20s. They actually knocked it down when they got 15,000, because they upped the testing, so they ran more tests and they got the percent positive down to about 15%. That's 1.5. But even that high, the CDC recommends that you do enough testing so that you can get the percent positive down to 5% or less, which means that you got a good chunk of the virus out there. If you got these higher numbers, these double digit numbers, means that you're missing a lot. There's a lot more positive that you're picking up. And again, the highest frequency I've heard was around 50%, which was in New York, which is a private group that got the Hasidic Jews together, and I think they got some high 56% positive. But they were all symptomatic. And of course, I guess that's largely what's going on most of these numbers, that if you're asymptomatic, many of these locations, you really can't get tested. Many cases, you can't be tested even if you're a contact.
No, that's right. Yeah. Here's a little piece from the big paper, Orlando Sentinel. It's a major paper there. Several lab companies that process coronavirus tests from Florida have reported incomplete data to the state, officials said today, creating discrepancies in the numbers public health officials rely on to track the pandemic across the communities in the state. In some cases, says the Orlando Sentinel, labs reported positive test results but did not report the number of negative test results. That has the potential to skew a key stat known as the positivity rate or the percent of tests that are positive. That measure is often used by public health officials to determine how widespread infections are in a community, blah, blah, blah. I'll send these over to you. You can look at them later on.
Well, that actually sounds like an explanation for the first paper that you read, where they were 100%. It was incomplete. So they didn't tell them how many negatives they had. They just told them who was positive. So that doesn't mean there's anything wrong with the test, or that the positives aren't positive. They just don't have, you know, that second number to calculate what the percent positive is.
Right.
We'll
figure it out.
Well, I think it's already shaken out. The story you read made it sound like, how could they possibly get 100% positive? These people can't all be positive. And the answer is, yes, they are all positive. They just didn't include the negatives.
The question then would
they
be, obviously,
gave you the results
is it a human error or some nefarious stuff? So I would suggest human error.
They wouldn't even consider it an error. They were just sending in the positives so that they could do the tracing on the positives.
Now, there were five major labs involved, so they all did the same thing, whatever. I named them. They're all there. Let me just send these over to you. You can process them.
That probably, they get it for a better price probably if they just get the positives and they don't have to go and give them all the information on the negatives. It's nothing nefarious. It's just a headline made for clickbait. I mean, it's nonsense. Well, the way you read it, it sounded like something's definitely wrong. And then when you read the second one, it said, well, there's nothing wrong. They just sent them the positives. They didn't send the negatives.
Well, that's why you
got
to read all the stories.
I got
them all for you here, so we'll send them.
That's what I'm saying. It would be very unusual for one lab to get 100% positive, and it sounds like there's four or five labs, and it really came down to how do they want the data back? You know, it could be that they're just backlogged. I mean, if they're farming these out to LabCorp or Quest, they're in the neighborhood of like a 7-day delay. So the data is difficult.
Wow, they're running
to use
that far behind, huh?
Yeah. So this is nationwide. Mm-hmm. I mean, these are national labs, and they've got facilities all across the country. And, you know, they service, you know, doctors regularly. So the doctors, you know, basically put them in their little pickup container and they leave it outside and they come by and pick it up and take it to the lab. And they would likely be doing this with the, with some of these testing facilities. You know, the doctors don't want to do it. So you end up going to a parking lot. If you get there at 9 a.m, you get tested. And if you get it there after that, they tell you they were already filled out. So that's what's going on there. And it's possible that they're so backed up that they just sent the positives first and they're going to follow with negatives. But they're trying to get caught up because generally it's the positive that require an action. I mean, if a person's positive, then they should be quarantined and their contacts should be traced. So it's the positives that are the samples that are actionable. The negatives are something you can just, you know, fill in later for the concentrate to do the percent positive number. So it's probably just a function of how busy they were. And there's nothing tricky about that. They've got the records. They know who they tested. They know who was positive, who was negative. And they gave them the positive results first, and they might have even asked for the positives first because they're concerned about, you know, there's such a delay. They'd say, well, just tell us the positives for now because we need to work on them by getting the person who's positive to stay quarantined. Because the whole issue is that you're supposed to be quarantined for 14 days. And if they're going to take a week to give the results, this person is supposed to be quarantined for a week.
I follow your
without
logic.
Knowing they're positive. And they're just going to say, well, you know, especially if they don't have symptoms yet, they're going to say, A, they can't afford to day off of work for 2 weeks, and or they don't want to use up all their vacation waiting around, and then find out they were negative and they've just been staying home because they couldn't process the sample quick enough. So I think that would pretty much explain it.
All right, very good. They're in your mailbox, so you look at them later. Okay.
Okay.
We got a lot to talk
about.
Just
a little bit more about the data today. It was, when the numbers get that high to 66,000, the top three account for about half of that. But you still have another... still have another 36,000 that are positive that don't include, the three biggest states, which are, California, Florida, and Texas. So it's a significant number. And the other number that's significant is that these locations that are kind of leading the pack that are reporting the biggest numbers are reporting deaths going up. So California included 141 deaths in today's report versus 46 yesterday and 23 the day before. So it's 23, 46, 141. Florida reported 133 deaths today versus 35 yesterday and 45 the day before. But that's another record. I mean, that's the most they reported for one day is 133. The most Californians reported for one day is 141. And then Texas was slightly lower, but they reported 87 deaths. And Arizona reported 92 deaths. So this all goes to Trump's nonsense about having the lowest...
And getting up to toward 100 deaths a day. Okay.
Fatality rate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is all on the timing. And the same thing with DeSantis or whatever the governor in Florida is. Oh, wow, we got young people.
Ron DeSantis.
Yeah. Right. We're most of the cases are young and they're not that sick. And, the numbers aren't nearly as bad as they look, and it's different than New York, and da 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 da. They're all just pure nonsense. This is the same virus that was in New York. It's going to have the same mortality rate. It might be slightly improved at the beginning because they're not overwhelmed. They get more fatalities when they're overwhelmed. I went through that before because they can't really hook them up on the ventilators and tweak it and modulate it, which takes about 45 minutes. They just hook them up and move on to the next one. They've got so many dying that they're doing the same thing they did in New York. In Arizona, they've rented refrigerated trucks so that they can stack the bodies.
It's going to be 120 degrees there, too, in Phoenix.
Right, well,
that's going to be fun.
No, the trucks actually do refrigerate. So
I understand. They're going to be working hard.
They'll keep it to the right. It'll be working hard, but they're just sitting still on the loading dock there. And and there's somebody going in and out, very frequently. So they'll know whether the generator is keeping it cold or not, because it's not like they put one body in and come back a couple days later. They're putting them on, multiple ones per day. So, this blows away Trump's argument that he's got this low fatality rate because it dropped from having 2,000 a day to 200 a day. Well, it's close to 1,000 a day now. There were almost 900 deaths reported, 875. So there are 875 deaths that were reported. And many of these states are, a few weeks behind the ones that are out front with the big numbers. So they'll start, a lot of these states are only reporting one or two deaths. Some are reporting zero. And that's because the virus is just starting to take off and they haven't really been infected long enough to die. So the hospitals are filling up. The refrigerator trucks aren't full yet, But it's all a matter of time. It's taking this point in time. It's not good news because they haven't died yet. They haven't been discharged. They're in an ICU and they're going to die. A certain percentage are going to die. And the percentage might be slightly improved on New York, but it's not going to be dramatically improved. And it's the same virus. So the virus hasn't changed. The only thing that's changed is the reporting and the spin. The spin has changed. The reporting has changed. And they've happened because they can't read a calendar. They can't figure out that if you're diagnosed and you go in the hospital, you don't die the day you go into the hospital. You die 2 or 3 weeks later. So when you're looking at the numbers, oh, we got a lot of cases and not many are dying, or you have trouble. Oh, we lowered it from about 2,000 a day to 200 a day. That's a 90% reduction in the death rate. That's nothing. That's just a different, it's just a different time point. It's taking the time points where the earlier outbreaks are essentially over. New York, as I said, has been reporting single digits for the last week or two. I think yesterday they got up to 10, which is a high. Today it was 5. The day before, 2 days ago it was 5. The day before that it was 6. So these states are reporting very low numbers, and the ones that the virus hasn't got, taken hold yet long enough are also reporting low numbers. But that number will be up to 2,000. And just to give you a reality check, not what Trump is pumping out on his news conference. He had a news conference today. I'll get to that. But the
lab up.
Yeah, most of the people watching it couldn't wait either. They couldn't wait till it was over. He just went on and on and on. He was rambling all over the place, turned into a campaign thing.
I think it's
More about Obama and Biden. And
he's on meds. There's some meds involved here somewhere. He's got to be on meds, some kind, maybe multiple kinds.
I'm not sure what he's on, but he should be. He does sound like he's mentally ill. But in any event, the latest projection out of Washington State, which is the one that Trump uses all the time because they tend to be lower than the other projections, is that by November 1st, there'll be 240,000 dead. So they're projecting another 100,000 between now and November 1st. And I think they're low. So I think that 240,000 is not going to be, that's going to be an undercount. It's going to be significantly higher than that. And so nothing's really changed other than the virus is now spreading over a much wider area. It's got 3 or 4 states that are kind of leading the pack with these big numbers. And they're, it's a rerun. They're running out of PPEs. They've got refrigerated trucks in there to take care of the bodies because they don't have any place to put the bodies. And they're running out of ICU beds. So in Arizona, they're shipping the patients out of state because there's no more hospitals in the state of Arizona.
They are. They're transporting them out of state. Wow.
Right. They're going to California, Nevada, and New Mexico, I think. Yeah, they're going to Albuquerque. I'm not sure where, maybe San Diego, and I'm not sure where Nevada is, the one in the south. Maybe it's Las Vegas. I don't know. But they are transporting them out of state because there aren't beds available in Arizona. And then these southern states are going to run into major problems because they're not all showing up in large metropolitan areas. So these local hospitals do not have the facilities to handle the COVID cases. They have to have negative airflow, and there's a bunch of things that are required to take those cases in. And so the numbers are going up, and they've already acknowledged that the reserve is running out of PPEs. So, you know, it's kind of like they were running out of PPEs, you know, at the beginning
changed.
Of this. And they never really replenished it.
No, six months.
And they haven't gone and you know, used the emergency powers or war powers, whatever they call it.
He won't do it.
Where they can order the companies to do it. Right.
DPA, Defense Production Act.
Right.
He won't use it.
Right.
He invoked it, but he won't use it. I beg your pardon.
Right.
To be accurate, I think he did order two companies to do something. Masks, I don't remember. But not nearly the scale needed. Not nearly. Here's an important story, Henry. This is really disconcerting for me. More headline, it's a Zero Hedge. I don't know where they got their data, but more than half COVID-19 patients in a new study have heart damage. Let me read just a little of this. While the mortality rate from COVID-19 is far lower than initially projected, the disease can leave people with a bevy of health problems of unknown duration, from fatigue to lingering respiratory issues to loss of taste and smell. Now we can add heart damage to that list of common post-COVID complications, according to a new study. Let's find out who did the study here. The long and short of it, older individuals with pre-existing heart issues or those with sleeper heart conditions, which have gone undiagnosed, are at the most risk. Hold on. Okay, that's a repetition of what we just said. While we've known since at least February that coronavirus was suspected of causing or contributing to cardiac problems, the extent has been largely unknown. In April, the Harvard Gazette, detailed the multiple ways COVID-19 may spark cardiac damage. And it goes through them here. I'll send you this one too. Last month, the president of Burundi died of a sudden heart attack at the age of 55 after falling ill with coronavirus. Now the new study has found that more than half COVID-19 patients have some kind of heart damage, according to Newsweek. And the link is here. A study involving 1,216 patients, 813 of them were diagnosed with COVID-19, revealed that 55% had abnormalities when given an echocardiogram between April 3rd and April 20th. And I'll, one more. The paper published in the Journal for European Heart, let me rephrase this. The paper published in the Journal, European Heart Journal, Cardiovascular Imaging, had an average participant age of 62, while 70% were male. 60% of the scans were performed in a critical care setting, such as an ICU unit or emergency room, while the others were carried out in general medicine settings, cardiology, respiratory, or COVID-19 wards. Some 54% of the patients had severe COVID-19. And finally, those with abnormal scans were more likely to be older and have certain underlying heart problems. But after the team excluded patients with existing heart conditions from their analysis, the proportion of abnormal scan results and those with severe cardiac disease was similar. This suggests that the issues were related to COVID-19, quote Newsweek.
Right. And there's a bunch of, you know, data points that support that. I mentioned when the cases started coming into New York, the physicians were saying, you know, the patient just came in and they did an EKG. It looks like they're having a heart attack. And they posted them on Twitter and the doctors were exchanging images. And they were saying, well, yeah, that's really common. The virus is hard on the heart, you know, and that's trying to overcome the virus. And there were pictures of people falling over dead in China as a result of the infection. And then there was the example in New York where they normally got 30-35 heart attack calls in a day, and they were getting like 120, and the percentage that died before they were able to get there was markedly elevated. So the you know, it was like I think it was 2/3 of the cases were already dead by the time the emergency arrived. And those are backed up. They're saying there's a long wait for ambulances in Phoenix. So this is all the same virus. It can get around these changes that I mentioned with a polybasic plebiscite. That's in all these variants. The thing that's different about the G-clad, right, or the Italian lineage is this one change in the spike protein that appears to allow the virus to attach more easily and get in to the cell. And so it spreads more efficiently. And that's why they end up getting these, you know, flood of cases coming in, because they all of a sudden, you know, it's in the area, gets to a critical mass, and then it's very contagious, and a lot of people are getting infected at about the same time and end up arriving in the hospital about the same time, and it overwhelms them. And that's part of the reason this is going on, because you know, in the United States, the curve never really got down to baseline. It did a few of the outbreaks of the Northeast, for instance. But in general, the peak went up. It started to come down a little bit, and it flattened out. So the curve was flattened, but it was going straight across at a very high level. So it was like there was still plenty of virus
plateau out
there.
Yeah.
Right. And all you had to do was say, well, you know, you guys can go back to work, or it's a holiday, just da 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 da. And everybody, you know, too many people went overboard and had too much close contact. And, you know, the bars were open so they could go to the bars, or others just have parties in their houses. And they just had these big clusters of cases, and then they went and infected others, and that's how you really got the ball rolling. So now, instead of, you know, 20,000 cases a day, it's 60,000 cases a day, and heading to 70,000 or 80,000 cases a day. And Fauci projected that they were going to get up to 100,000 cases today per day. And when you have that number of people coming in, then you overwhelm the system, and the care is not optimal, and you have a higher death rate. So, you know, the guys that are quoting the lower death rate, number one, that's history. It was down to 200 a week or two ago. It's 800, 900 now. And it still hasn't been long enough to get these numbers that are coming in. It just started to move like 2 or 3 weeks ago above this 20,000 mark. And so those people are going into the ICU, and it's going to take them another week or two to die. And all of a sudden, these numbers of the deaths per day is going to start skyrocketing in multiple locations, and there'll be 2,000 per day. And if you get up to 2,000 per day, to get another 100,000 deaths, it takes, you know, less than 2 months, and it's still July. So you should be able to hit 240,000 in sometime in September or the beginning of October. They're projecting it for November 1st. So like I said, the CDC likes to use them because they end up putting out lower numbers, and then they parade that number out and say, look, this is only going to be 240,000. But 240,000 is a lot of patients, and they're not saying that the pandemic is going to be over November 1st. They're just saying there's going to be 240,000 dead by November 1st. So
got
the situation is not good. Trump held a, well, it was billed as a press conference. And I don't know. I didn't see all of it. Several of the outlets didn't carry it or broke away from it because the announcement was something about, you know, changing sanctions on Hong Kong because of the new regulations by China.
Right.
And then he quickly devolved into a campaign rally saying, you know, how well things went in 2016.
He doesn't miss a chick.
How Hunter Biden should be in jail. He stole all this money, and how Obama and Biden didn't handle the swine flu outbreak, and that, you know, they stopped testing there, and you know that's one of his newer points. He mentioned that in a CBS interview, and I think that left some people confused because he just said that they didn't handle the pandemic, and they translated that into, well, there wasn't any coronavirus pandemic at the time, but that's not what he was talking about. He was talking about the swine flu. And that's somewhat of an apples and oranges, because just as a quick reminder, that started in the spring of 2009. And initially, it was hard to do the testing. The CDC had to develop an assay since it was a flu virus, and it was actually the H1N1 serotype. They had to develop an assay that would pick up swine H1N1 and not pick up seasonal H1N1, which was co-circulating. But what happened was, as you got towards the end of the flu season or into the summer, the other viruses just faded away. So the only virus, the only flu virus that was in circulation by like May or June was the swine flu. And the swine flu is H1N1, which is influenza A. And so you could use the influenza A test to know whether the patient had swine flu or not, because there was no seasonal H1N1 circulating. There was no seasonal H3N2 circulating. Everything was swine flu. But what happened then was somewhat similar to what's happened in this outbreak. That Quest started offering a test for the virus so the doctors could do the same thing they're doing here. They could just collect the samples. Back then, they weren't as concerned about the virus as they are this virus. So a lot of the testing was actually done in the doctor's office. They had some regulations that you want to come in the front door and go out the back door, so you didn't have as much contact with patients in the waiting room, et cetera. But they went and took the swabs. They put it in the transport fluid. They put it in a little box. They set it outside, and Quest picked it up, and they gave the results. And it was a little bit of a delay that way also. It generally took 5 or 6 days to get results. And there's actually a treatment. I mean, you could start on Tamiflu without getting the results and just assume that it's going to be positive, which it usually was. And then labs set up their own test here in Pittsburgh, University of Pittsburgh Medical Center, did an in-house test, and they started running those, and they were getting a very high positive rate. I think they were getting 70% of the samples were positive. And then they just said, don't bother. If they got flu-like symptoms, they got swine flu. You don't really have to do the swab and send it in because, number one, we've been overwhelmed, but number two, the frequency of positivity is so high, and probably the 30% were negative were probably just bad swabs. It didn't mean they were really negative. So they were getting 70% positive. And I said, don't bother testing. Just treat them like they're swine flu. And then as far as how the fatality rate was on the lower side for H1N1. That's why reporters were saying, well, it's just really a pandemic. Don't you have to get a certain number of deaths? And I said, no, that's not the definition of pandemic. It just has to be a novel virus that's circulating, you know, throughout the world.
Got it. All right.
And
I have another topic coming up here in a minute when you're ready. So.
Okay. Well, that's about the end of it. The idea was it replaced seasonal flu. So by the fall, it started up early. You know, it started up as soon as the kids went back to school. So in the South, they went back to school at the beginning of August. And then more went to school, started school at the end of August. And then here in Pittsburgh, it kind of came in two waves. The first one, it was very mild, which was at the very beginning of school. And then about 6 weeks later, in the middle of October, they had a severe enough infection that they ran fevers. They went to the doctors. The doctors said, you got swine flu. And a lot of kids were out of school. A lot of teachers were out of school. And some schools ended up closing down temporarily because they didn't have enough teachers to hold the class. So it was very similar. The number of deaths was very similar to a regular flu season because there was no H1N1, there was no H3N2. So all the deaths in the fall of 2009 were essentially swine flu. So it was a little bit different on the target population. The older people had immunity from seasonal H1N1, and so they didn't get that sick. And it was mostly younger adults that ended up getting the virus. But it wasn't like it was, well, they didn't test because they wanted to keep the numbers down. They didn't test because they knew that everybody was positive. And anyway, that's what ended up happening there. So Trump's news conference was, you know, he only took one or two questions. He really didn't say a whole lot about the pandemic and didn't really say a whole lot about even the school closing.
He didn't say much of anything.
Yeah. He just rambled. He was mostly,
I think he's,
you know,
on meds. I mean, this kind of, it's a stream of semi-consciousness, and he doesn't say much. He repeats himself, and he's got a seemingly diminishing vocabulary. Yeah, his vocabulary is getting to be more narrow in its focus. He uses fabulous and fantastic over and over again. I don't know. I think he's on meds, serious tranquilizers. I'm not passing judgment on that. It just is what it is.
No,
but it sure as hell looks like it.
He's been talking that way for a while. I mean, it's vocabulary.
I've noticed it. I know. There's some decline.
I think he does more repeating, but I don't think the repeating is from the medications. I think the repeating is, he was bragging about how he passed his cognitive test. You know,
I saw it.
The test was like a year or two ago. And, you know, he thought it was great that he could draw a clock. I mean, this is what's on this test.
I didn't see this.
No.
Draw a clock?
Draw a clock. When you get advanced.
And he
Alzheimer's
aced it. He drew a goddamn clock and he said, I aced it. Excuse me.
He drew a clock, and I think you have to repeat back the names of five animals or something. They give you five animals and say, what did I say? That's what he aced, right? Right. So it's. You know, there are serious issues, I think they are getting worse. I think they're more evident, not by his limited vocabulary, because I think it's always been limited, but they become more obvious because he keeps repeating himself. He keeps saying the same things over and over again. He would much rather talk about 2016 and what kind of promises
the
he
good
made
old
then
days.
Than to go over either what he has done, or, I mean, he had another interview. He said, well, you know, if you get elected, what are you going to do in the next 4 years? And he says, well, I know a lot of people. That was it.
Mm-hmm. I know a lot of people.
He didn't give any specifics.
It narrows it right down.
You know, I've been in this position, you know, and been president for 4 years. I got a lot of connections. And he didn't say what they were connections for or what he was going to do, but that was the extent.
Those are irrelevant, Henry. Just leave it alone.
But,
He drew a clock. He aced the test. Yeah. That's all we need to know. Right. Okay, here we go. A study published on July 11th by researchers at King's College London found that antibodies detected in the human body which fight the coronavirus declined after just a few weeks, leaving the possibility of herd immunity out of the question. This is King's College in London. Epidemiologists define the herd immunity threshold for a given virus as the percentage of the population that must be immune to ensure that its introduction will not cause an outbreak. If enough people are immune, an infected person will likely come into contact only with people who are already immune, rather than spreading the virus to someone who is susceptible. The implications of such a study engender the possibility that future waves of the novel coronavirus could return in seasons. Okay, we've already pretty much thought that that was probable. These researchers found that 60% of the participants built up a potent antibody response, while only 17% retained that potency at the end of a 90-day study period. I'll stop there.
Yeah. And there have been warnings for that. Fauci warned on that. And right. He was saying that he doesn't know how long-lasting it's going to be. And,
What is that? Is that anything to do with the polybasic cleavage in the virus? Does that have anything to do with it? The lack of the body to build up the long-term immunity?
No, I think it's just how immunogenic it is and how the immune system evolves. And I think it might be because it's a cold virus. And so, you didn't really need a robust, long-lasting immune response because generally the disease was relatively mild. And so there wasn't a lot of selection pressure to have a very robust immune response because you'd get over the flu fairly easily. And it wasn't that big a deal if you basically got the flu 3 months later and you had to do another immune response. The response is strong enough to get rid of that flu virus, and if it's cold virus, and if it's a normal cold virus, it's not something that there's a big advantage to having a long-lasting immunity because it's generally a mild disease. So the polybasic cleavage site would be more along the lines that it creates a lot more problems than a cold virus, which is going to stay in your respiratory tract. And this is going to go around and attack other organs. And that's why you have these issues with the heart, why you have these clotting issues in various blood vessels, why you have kidney issues. And
I'm still in favor of anybody who comes down with a positive diagnosis, maybe even before this preventative, take one aspirin a day. Try to keep your blood thin. That seems to be what they're doing to some patients. They're giving them thinners.
Yeah, but they're doing that after they've got it.
Correct.
The issue, I think, is a dosing thing, that whether a baby aspirin or even one adult aspirin is going to give you enough to overcome what happens when...
I don't know. That's something that you could find out and you'll become even more famous than you are.
Well, the issue is that the virus replicates quickly and therefore it's more likely to generate a stronger immune response. And it's the immune response that kind of leads to these clotting issues, and then you have these clots all over the place. So my guess is because you have so many clots while you're sick with the virus that you're going to need that an anticoagulant might be a good treatment, but it would probably be at a higher dose than you get by prophylactically taking an aspirin. And because it's kind of an all or once thing. It's not that people are getting clots from a very mild illness. They get clots when the virus is kind of getting out of control, and that kind of cranks up the immune systems to high levels. But that could also be part of the short-term response, is that it's kind of an acute infection. The virus is growing quickly. The immune system kicks in and hits the virus very hard, and then it kind of fades away, because otherwise you're going to have too many complications from the antibodies.
Oh.
And so it ends up being short-lived.
Interesting. So, all right, very good. Thank you. Okay,
so
well, we cleared up some things. Yeah.
I was just going to say, that's why the vaccines may be a problem, that it might work short-term but not really give you long-term. And that I think a lot of people are expecting the coronavirus to be like the flu. It's going to be a seasonal thing, and it's going to be outbreaks over and over again. And it might,
I think you're right.
It might keep it from being as severe, but it's not going to get rid of the virus.
Got it. I agree. Yeah. All right. Talk to you tomorrow night, Henry. Thanks. Be well. Take care.
Okay, very good. You too. Take care.
Okay, that's our program tonight, and there was a lot of really good information tonight. And I hope you'll share if you can. If you're in the archives, go ahead. Brother Nathaniel's hour, the first hour, especially, maybe I'll put those up. I should. If I put them up on YouTube, you know what'll happen. They'll get squashed or quashed immediately. All right, we'll be right back tomorrow night, 21 hours. See you then.